how to apply them in different ways. And if they don't, then they'll either be sly or they'll become frustrated and change their mind and do something else. But the advantage is they felt they were trained and equipped for doing what they wanted to do, even though they were not qualified to do it. The Vedic system would just say you're not qualified, because people kind of understood the system better. So if they weren't Brahmins and they were told they didn't have that nature, it wouldn't be minded. But nowadays it's not like that.
Tell me.
Yeah, everybody wants to do whatever they want to do, and they want to pick and choose. They want to do they want to just pick what they feel is the best out of each, you know? You know, the no one's on top of the Brahmins, the independence of the Brahmins, the power of the Kshatriyas, the wealth of the Vaishyas, and the, you know, lack of importance, lack of standards of the Shudra. You know, but they don't want to take the responsibilities that go with that. The Brahmin just follows. He has to follow. He has to be self-disciplined. The Kshatriya must give the protection. Like that, the Vaishya must give tax and charity. And the Shudra must work under others' direction. That side they leave, 100%. And you keep this side. So therefore it's very hard to tell anybody that you don't belong here, because they're attached to those things. So they're approaching it from their own attachments rather than duty. You know, it's coming from substandards, lower standards, not coming from Dharma. You know, like that. So it becomes very difficult. So in any case, due to the thing, it's necessary anyway. Either for those who are qualified, but just, you know, they have to start somewhere. So these give them the entrance into the, you know, into the how you say? Into the field, yes. And those who are not qualified, it gives them entrance to the field so they can figure out they don't belong there. You know? But they'll make their own decision and they'll be satisfied. Like that. So then it works very nicely. And then for someone who, you know, more rare, then they can just take from, just straight from the old traditional things. But it's not so many who you find that can do that. You know? I'm finding it's I mean, I always thought it was 2%, but I'm finding out it may be 0.2%. it's
what was that,
2%? I always thought it was 2% of the student body could, like, take full advantage of the Vedic system in its kind of more orthodox form. But I'm finding is it's much less than that, very much less. You know, they can take it as it is in its traditional methods. Because, like, you do like this and you keep talking until you become familiar with it, and then everything gets in place, but it's in the head. It's not something you've memorized. It's by understanding and realization that the mind map is created, you know. Otherwise, you learn it externally, you memorize it, so you think you have the mind map, but you have the external form of it. But until you utilize it and apply it, then you get the experience, you get the realization, you find everybody will readjust it to fit their own thing. So the Vedic is don't worry about using it today. You know, it's like you develop it till it's the point where it's part of you. And then you're able to apply it in all the situation. So it's done by constantly hearing and experiencing and doing the different things that are there, that are, in other words, it's always used in the practical. You know, like just give example, just is something like you want them to learn something with rhythm, so then you will teach them actual music that they would learn, use, and from that they would gain that, you know, rather than teach them something, a rhythm that they wouldn't use. You know, like in the with the children, they go to school and they learn nursery rhymes. They'll never use them as an adult. So the Vedic system is you take what would be used by an adult that a small child could absorb and use, and teach them that. It's a different approach. It means modern system is you teach little kids stuff to little kids. You teach, you know, when they get medium, you teach that. And when they get to adult, then you get down to reality. But the Vedic system is, no, everyone's taught reality. But in the reality, there's simple things and there's complicated things. So basically, you have memorization, you have technique, and you have concepts and concepts, the esoteric.
Values.
Yes.
You were talking about values in that sense? Or?
Yeah, well, that you can apply it in that way. It means the whole thing goes that means it's the yeah. It apply yeah values. If you want to use that, if you want to use hearing, hearing skills, yeah, you want to do that. So the first stage is memorization. Kids have great memories. They're better than adults. Hmm. So for them to memorize everything that you want to teach them is important. But then people will complain, oh, it's just that. They're not using their critical thinking skills. They don't have much at that time. You develop them, but that's not the emphasis. The emphasis is just on learning, memorizing, because they can absorb a huge amount at that time. Then, when they hit the medium level, then that's where the critical thinking skills and the application and practice like that is brought out. And then when that is there, then you get into the esoterics of what is going on, like that. We also see that in the Vedic, is that the and then Prabhupada points out then the next is that you can preach, yeah. So then that the Veda itself, the Samhita, is learned by the Brahmacharis. The Grihastha applies it to the Brahmanas and all the sacrifices and all that. And he gets some understanding. Then the realization, the esoterics, come in the Aranyakas as a Vanaprastha. And then the training, the teaching of others, comes as a sannyas from the Upanishads. You know, like that. So it's the whole Vedic system is that one principle applies in so many ways. That's what's so nice about it. You know, like that. So it's everything's connected. You can't disjoint anything. So you see even the Upanayana ceremony, the process of teaching, the process of one going through one's life, and it's all based around the same central theme, like that. So comes very good. So it must be done. So it's, I always thought it was 2%, but it's kind of like 2% like a very strong Vedic traditional atmosphere, but 2% can't handle the full training program. And it means the depth of service attitude, questioning, and how you say inspiration in learning, like that. That's much smaller, like that. So, in that other, then some of the modern technique can be quite useful for training those who don't learn naturally by just the pure Vedic system, which is the bulk of the students interested in Vedic education. You know, then you have those where the emphasis is not so much on the Vedic, then it's more modern, like that. Emphasis is more there. You know, like a boarding school, a Krishna conscious boarding school. You get that. You know, strong academics. You know, and strong kind of like, you know, ashram, like that. But it doesn't necessarily, everything's not connected together. Mm. The Vedic thing, you can't really separate the ashram activities from the knowledge, the culture, the philosophy. It becomes very hard. You can kind of bring it out just for understanding it, but in application, you can't.
It's experiential learning.
Yeah, yeah, like that. It's totally in that way. So Prana was saying he would come and work, and we would try to, means we're working on just the pure Vedic aspect, and he would work on taking the Vedic concepts and put them into the modern terminology and some of the methods used to get it across. But unfortunately, he's never been able to.
Not yet.
Yeah, it's always, it's kind of like, you know, Australia coming to Mayapur and then whoop, over to America, and then America coming to Mayapur, and then you get stuck in Vrindavan, and then, you know, this, and always, somehow or another never makes it here. Mm. You know? Because he has a good grounding in both, like that. He has good grounding in both. So then he could work on that middle ground, you know, which I, from what I see, is about 2/3 to 3/4, probably even more. Maybe it depends how broad you take it and how much you could take it. I would say that system would work best on everybody. Because the modern doesn't have a standard on which to keep it in place. It always moves, you know. It's like, you know, there's old math, and they throw that out, there's new math, and then they find out that no one learns anything. Then they try to find a middle ground, and, you know. Well, the Vedic, there's a standard, and then you always have something to judge against whether you're getting there or not. It doesn't, the goalposts don't keep changing.
Yeah.
So that method will work best for everybody. Then it's just a matter of the ashram environment. Would it be more Vedic or you know, a little bit less? Keep the principles, but get rid of the externals. You know, principles always work. You can use it in America, you can use it anywhere. But the externals of it, then some like, some don't. Like that.
Yeah, there's a school in England called St. James, which looks like a very posh English school.
Hmm.
It's based on Vedic principles.
Hmm. Yeah, they use Vedic math.
Some Sankaracharya or something like that. You've heard of that school?
Yeah, I've heard that they... Oh, is that? Because I saw the book came out of St. James. It's on Vedic math. They produced one book.
Okay,
I don't know
from St. James, huh?
Yeah. Do you know the address there?
No,
or how to contact
them?
Yeah, if you could find out, I'd like to contact them. Yeah, if you can do that, then I'd like to contact there and find out if they have more stuff has come up on that, more material, especially in the Vedic math. Or you can just follow it through and see if you can get.
Because they opened a school similar to that in Auckland called Ficino School.
Mm.
And my Kali Yuga, my stepmother's brother is one of the founders of it in Auckland, so... Mm. And he's got all the contacts, he could find out and all that stuff.
Hmm. Oh, that would be nice. Because we just like to know on that, because I saw 2 years back or something, they came out with one book on it. Because if they already have more already worked out, then it saves us having to do it. Yeah, it's like why bother.
Yeah, they teach Vedic maths, they teach Sanskrit, they study the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita, but of course from the Mayavadi.
Yeah, yeah.
They follow some Sankaracharya.
It's probably Kanchipuram.
Probably deceased now.
Oh, no, they're probably following the Govardhan Mutt.
Sadhanananda, something like this.
Yeah, I think there's Govardhan Mutt, because he was the one in the Vedic math.
But in Puri?
Yeah.
And basically, they claim to follow all the philosophies. They have Bibles in every desk, and they call the school Ficino after some Italian philosopher, and they dress like English posh school, like Eton or Harrow, you know. But the whole basis of it is all... basically Vedic,
yeah. No, it's
and a lot of the military people are sending their boys there because it's the most traditional. It's more traditional than Eton and Harrow now because it's got a foundation, whereas Eton and Harrow it's...
Yeah, it changed. I mean, you know that they put doors in the bathrooms at Harrow now? The toilets have doors. Murari Gupta, when he went to the school, they didn't have doors, and then halfway through then they put doors on the toilet.
I think they even have girls here now.
Then it's finished. Because then no one can study. I saw a thing. It was in Australia. It was a whole one magazine that normally does all kinds of things. Did a feature. The whole magazine was just on education. What facilities are available in Australia, as far as private and boarding schools, not the government schools. And so many of the things that were girls' schools, you know, means boarding schools, is that they brought out the point that when girls are going to school with boys, then generally you'll find that the best students are the boys. Like that. The girls, means the boys' ability goes down a little bit. The girls' ability goes down a lot. But when the girls are on their own, then their grades and that so many times come out better than the boys.
Depends on the age also. Like in the younger years, boys mature later.
Yeah, yeah.
So especially in linguistics, girls are miles ahead.
Yeah.
So there's a problem the other way as well.
Yeah.
That boys are really suffering at school in co-ed schools because they get a self-esteem problem that all these girls are doing so much better than them.
Mm.
And it can affect them for their whole teaching career.
Yeah.
I was reading a book called Raising Boys and it was touching on some of these things. There's some interesting books on... gender issues in education, which I'd quite like to have a look at.
Yeah, no, because the point is what has to be remembered is that a girl by the age of 11, 12 has to be able to hold down a house herself.
Mm.
So Krishna's just geared it that they gain that material maturity at a much younger age. Then the boys expected them to teach longer, because as soon as one hits that age, then the desires become very strong. So it's just engineered that the boys hit it later so they can study more. Therefore, they're the guru pati.
Mm.
And the wife then develops that maturity quicker because she's the dharma patni. Her thing is dharma, while his thing is the philosophy. You know. So then with that combination, it works very nice. But that's why the age difference must be there. Boys must always be 6 to 10 years older because that's when their maturity hits.
Yeah.
A girl at 12 and a boy at 18, 20, 22, then they're equally matched. But otherwise, a 12-year-old girl and a 12-year-old boy, the boy's just in the ozone. The girl's actually thinking of marriage and house and this and that. The boys aren't at all.
Yeah.
That won't come until the late teens.
Yeah.
So it's totally... So the Vedas already have all this there. That's why they don't bother with it. They you know, no question of doing that kind of stuff.
Like this guy John Gray, who wrote the Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus.
Mm.
I heard that he was involved with Maharishi, and you know, all these things are coming from Vedic insights.
Yeah, well, you can take that easily and just preach. I did it in Melbourne. I gave a class just on now that scientific points and the Vedic things. It just matches so perfectly.
You were talking about the brain, left and right brain.
Yeah, and then how that makes women in their positive, their strong senses, mothers, and their weak senses, tigers. And in the men, then they're strong as guru, and the others, sense enjoyers, who are, you know, the dancing dogs, like that. And it's simply because of how the brain works, like that. So it's all very, very nice.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I find all these subjects very fascinating.
Yeah, they're fun. They're good fun. Good fun. So, Jai Ho.